This is Jeff Chrisman, and I'm here on the Living Arts of Tulsa podcast today, and I'm very, very joyous and very grateful to have the opportunity to visit with two of the team members from Cult Love Sound Tapes, and I'm actually visiting today with Natty Gray Watson and also with Lauren Drummond. Thank you both so much for taking the time with me today.
Immensely flattered to be here. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Definitely very excited to talk with you all. I've had an opportunity to read a little bit about your project and some of the history, but I realize that reading about that is definitely very, very different from actually being able to hear this, the story, and hear what your all's experiences have been in your own words. So what I thought I would do, if it isn't too heavy or too much to start things out, what I thought I would do is, for the benefit of viewers and listeners who might not be familiar with you guys and with the project, just to hear, and this is something if you all would like to take turns or just however it comes together, it would be really cool to hear in your own words what this project is about in your minds and in your spirit, and also what it means to you all at a deeper level.
Gosh, that's...
I hope that's not too much.
No. It's awesome. We love these sort of questions. This is, I don't know, where do you think we should start?
I guess we can just begin with what we are, you know?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, Cult Love Sound Tapes is a Tulsa-based music, art, and cassette tape collective, essentially. And we specialize in rare and limited releases of all sorts of media, multimedia products, whether it's wearable merchandise, cassette tapes, VHS, zines. I mean, really almost anything you can think of. But I guess Cult Love started as a cassette tape label originally around 6 years ago, and it was originally me and Christian Holscher who started it when we were in our very early 20s and late teens, and we were kind of looking just for like a way to become more involved with like our local music community, because Lauren, Christian, and I had all grown up going to local concerts and volunteering at all sorts of like nonprofits. Like Tulsa Roots Music was a big one growing up that we did a lot of volunteering for. So we always had a big participation presence in the local music and art community, but we kind of wanted to find a way to actively contribute more than just as like audience members or
we were trying to wiggle our way in there totally. Like actually be part of it.
Totally. And kind of in like ways that weren't just, you know, like start a band or like keep selling merch or volunteering at shows or doing artist hospitality. It's not that we don't love doing that and still do it quite frequently.
Yeah.
Just for fun. And at the time, I personally had been getting into a lot more of like extreme music and kind of like more niche experimental genres, where like cassette tape culture had never actually really gone away. Because I keep hearing there's a lot of talk of like, and I'm sorry for bulldozing over you, Lauren, but I just I get out like kind of like old physical mediums like that, but there's a lot of talk about like the resurgence of cassette tapes, when like the reality is that cassette tapes maintained a presence from their creation till, you know, 2021 throughout a lot of like underground and niche cultures and genres, from like especially if you go into places like grindcore or like harsh noisecore, screamo, experimental music, ambient, I guess kind of more like niche, which I put in like quotes because it sounds really pretentious to be like, oh, niche or extreme music. I feel like I sound kind of goofy doing that. So I was really into that at the time. We decided like, heck, let's start releasing music for our friends and artists we know on cassette tapes. And I guess that was kind of like the original origin, 6 years of Cult Love as a thing. But
yeah,
you want to add anything, Lauren?
Well, since then, it's just modified into this massive collective where we've used it as mainly promotion of our immediate friends. We were lucky enough to already have a very talented group of friends, you know, musicians, artists, designers, you know, people who make clothing, all that kind of stuff, and writers even. And so we were able to start it pretty easily and then expand from there after getting out of the local scene. And now we're reaching, you know, north, internationally, that kind of stuff. It's pretty crazy. Wow. Yeah.
So we've been like, it started out as a cassette tape label, and we've always kind of hung out, I guess, with like a creative crowd. Again, I put in quotes, so I don't want to sound like an ass or anything, but so like it was pretty easy with like our involvement in the local community, is like it was pretty easy to like find our place within it. And I mean, really kind of what we always wanted it to be was like kind of a
of, like, I guess a flagship for the creative community of Tulsa, like something for a lot of people to be able to rally around and participate in. Because at its core, it's a very communal, collaborative, collective, and even when it was just purely a cassette tape label, it was that way. So really, it was kind of, I guess, like the mission statement of Cold Love is for just the general advancement of the greater Tulsa creative community on a national and international scale.
Because we feel like we're... Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I was going to ask, too, as far as the... as far as
Well, I did a good job, too. I think you did a good job, too.
But, sorry about that. I think there was a little bit of a delay there. I apologize. I didn't mean to interrupt there. Sorry.
Oh, no, fine. You got to be really careful because we'll sit here and we'll just go and go and go and go.
No, I love it. I love it.
So me and Kristen Holster, when we were like 19 and 20 is what originally started it. And we had just done a lot of creative collaborations before that with like kind of like experimental like VHS movies and stuff. So then we wanted to become more involved with ways we could actually participate in our community besides just kind of doing like weirdo projects with just each other, I guess, like making noise in our bedroom and stuff. So we started that. And then in 2016, I moved to Tokyo to do some of my Japanese studies there because in college I was studying Japanese. And whenever I moved away, we realized that we had reached kind of an impasse where it was like either we're going to have to kill Cult Love because we weren't going to be able to maintain it with me living abroad, or we're going to have to bring somebody else into the fold. And Lauren generously and foolishly volunteered to be a part of it and got herself like completely sucked into it. She basically did everything that I had ever done for Cold Love as far as roles go while I was living abroad. But also, I guess, like, I don't know. Lauren's had more of a presence in it than just that, though.
Well, before that, I was able to just throw cash at it. You know, I was able to just I hear you, you know. We could just, I'll donate some money and we can buy some t-shirts, you know, that kind of, it was more fun. But now, you know, I'm doing the folding and the mailing and that kind of stuff. And,
So she kind of got pulled into the workhorse train of being Christian. So I guess that kind of leads us maybe to defining, like, because there's a lot of overlap, like, because Cold Love, I guess at its core is Christian, Lauren, and I, but again, it's like, it's way broader than that, and it reaches out to, like, our direct friend group and to, like, the community as a whole, and basically anyone that's ever worked with us, collaborated with us, or even just attended our events, I would almost consider it's, like, part of the cult or whatever. But so there's a lot of overlap in what people do, but I guess like for me personally, my role in the collective is mostly with like the management of like physical media, like are the actual cassette tape production and stuff like that, as well as like a lot of footwork and event production, management, networking. I guess a lot of footwork stuff. Yeah, mailing stuff and so on and so forth, I guess. It's kind of hard to define sometimes because we do a bunch of different projects, curatorial stuff, so... And then Christian, who isn't present right now, is kind of like the big driving force between like a lot of our visual art and like graphics. Like most of the graphics for Cold Love is stuff that he came up with or collaborated with somebody else on. So he does a huge amount of like the art direction. But again, like there's so much overlap. He's like, he sells merch and stuff too sometimes. I'll let you talk, Lauren. I'm sorry. I had too much caffeine.
Yeah, and I take care of the more like business side of things, project management, you know, the financial side, and occasionally some legal stuff if we need it. Lawyer. Self-dubbed lawyer of Cult Love.
Which is hilarious to even call like Cult Love like a business. It's so like ironic to even say because it's like there's there's no profits or anything happening. Anything that we've only not to sound like martyrs, but like over the years, I mean, this has only been something we've really dumped money into. And anything that we make, whether it's from merchandise runs or events or cassette tape sales, blah, so on and so forth, it's all just been recycled back into the collective in order to fund other communal projects.
Well, I love that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, dang. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me tell
I
you
love it. I love it. Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that really spoke to me and really jumped out to me when I was reading about you guys is this idea about, and I've always been very fascinated myself, not that this conversation is about me, but that I've had a fascination with that intersection. And sometimes there is no intersection between art and business. And so what I really dig about what you all are doing is that this is something where it's really about taking those resources, if I'm understanding correctly, and really sharing this with the music community and sharing it with the community at large, or anyone that is interested in this type of music and art. And I'm incredibly moved by that. That this is really, you know, I realize some people. Yeah, but I mean, it's so easy. I realize it's so easy to get caught up in things as a business, and kind of, and you see, you know, various projects and undertakings that end up, you kind of forget a little bit about why, you know, what this whole thing is about. And so I love the fact that this is what you all, I mean, at the end of the day, that you have this passion for giving back to the music community and giving back to the community.
I don't know. I have a lot of commentary on that, I guess, personally. But Lauren, would you like to say anything first? Or?
No, it's just, it's all, it reminds me of, like, it's recyclable. You know, it's like everything, we might make a small profit off of something, but it's immediately recycled into another band or another merch run. So if we're making money off of t-shirts, that immediately goes to fund a cassette run for another band. You know, it's like, it's taken and then given and taken and given in this little circle.
Yeah.
It's funny though, or I guess like, on kind of a slightly more serious note, is that it is like, because we have done this for 6 years. And then, like I mentioned before, that we did a lot of like volunteering and stuff like that in the community. But it's been kind of, it gets more challenging as you grow a little bit older. Because Lauren's 26, Christian's 26, and I turned 26 in May, where you're kind of trying to, you're at this weird impasse of like adulthood. And at least for me personally, I find myself feeling more and more passionate about this as time goes on. But it also becomes harder and harder and harder to maintain while also trying to have footing as like, I guess, like what a lot of people consider like a normative, legitimate, like kind of adult, like life and career.
Right.
So we have reached kind of an impasse where we feel like we would like to take this somewhere professionally, or at least to some degree that like legitimizes us, maybe on a more serious note, to where we can, I guess, honestly, for so that the three of us can make this something we did like full time, and we could expand it to benefit the community of Tulsa and even grander.
Right. Because right now it's nights and weekends. Like during the day, I'm an environmental geoscientist, and then Christian in the day is a graphic designer for Gilcrease, and then Natty does work for all over the place. Like, I don't even know where the heck you work anymore.
I'm kind of a bum to some degree. I take a lot of contract work, but my boss and my mentor, Nathan Young from Tulsa Noise and Peyote Tapes, I did a lot of work for him, and I take contract work where I can. But I used to be a teacher before that, and it was like, that was like such a hectic year of my life after I got out of college and I started teaching and doing like literacy intervention programs. And it'd be like, I'd wake up at 5:30 and then I'd be on the way to school at 6:30 and I'd teach all day, get off at 4 and immediately go start working on Cult Love projects, try and work out and like maintain some sort of like physical health. And then like, so we'd work on that for like the early part of the evening, have dinner. And then we'd usually go out to either bars or to one of the other person's house where we'd start working on new projects. And we'd be up until like, usually at least 1 or 2 a.m. like almost every night, and then
start again,
sleep for 3 or 4 hours and do it all over again. So that was a pretty brutal year, but yeah, it's like, I don't know, it takes a lot of sacrifice and prioritization. I think like the three of us have really kind of, at least for the last few years, if not all of it, definitely like prioritized the Cold Love sound tapes over pretty much everything else in our lives, for better and for worse.
yeah no I, and I love that too. I mean, to have this passion for something that you see the impact of it in the particular community that you all are serving. I mean, that to me is to already have that and then have the option or the opportunity to do, you know, to do with it or to grow it, you know, as you want to. I mean, that is just in of itself, I think, is such an incredible thing. You know, that's such an incredible blessing to already know, you know, what you're passionate about and, you know, and see the impact of that.
Jeff, you are flattering the heck out of us. Well, honestly, I needed this pep talk. I needed this for the new year.
and there's no agenda at all, but it's No, I was going to say, I mean, I'm basically, at the end of the day, I'm an old hippie at heart. And so, I mean, this has always been something that resonates with me. I mean, and I love the, the you know, it's very clear that you guys are very passionate about this. And so that's what I was going to ask as far as just in terms of, you know, things that you guys hear in the music community, as far as the artists that you help and provide, you know, provide financial support to or provide merchandise, and just getting some sense of what that's been like to see the effect of that, you know, how you guys have actually energized that in some way.
It's immensely flattering. I think I'm sorry I keep talking first, Lauren.
Go for it.
It's funny because, like, it's really, really nice to have, like, outside perspectives on things and hear other people's two cents, because, again, it is, like, a communal project. So we do like hearing feedback from other people on what they like, on how they perceive us or how they think we could be doing things better or the things that we could be adjusting to be more accommodating to the community or whoever. Because it's really, really easy, you know. I think it's, like, it's kind of a cliche saying, but it's, like, you know, when you're in the person in the maze, it's really easy to only see what's, like, right in front of you. Sometimes it's kind of hard for us to, like, I think get, like, an actual grasp of, like, what our impact has been sometimes, or, like, what we need to be doing, because we're just kind of running around like little rats. So it's really nice to hear outside perspective, like your own or whoever's. I mean, even if it is a little more critical of us. Oops, sorry.
I love it. Yeah, and I was going to ask as well. I thought it would be very interesting to get some sense too of why these particular bands or why these particular genres of music are really something that resonate with you guys. So I didn't know if there's anything you might want to share just about your earlier life and just, you know, any experiences that you had that really kind of lit the fire, so to speak. Or I don't know if that's the right phrase. Or I hope it's okay to use that, but it lit the fire for this. Yeah.
Well, Lauren, you started this one. Talk about your creative experiences.
Well, I mean, see, most of them started with you, like going to concerts with you when we were young. Because we all went to high school together. We all went to Booker T.
Okay.
So we were all born in Tulsa, raised in Tulsa. Actually, no, you were born in Oklahoma City.
Technically.
But he moved to Tulsa very young, so we'll claim him as a Tulsan. So we all, you know, it was the concerts we went to as kids, like, Maddie would take Christian and I to his metal shows and that kind of stuff. And so that was kind of the genre that we grew up on and started with and picked and expanded from there. I mean, now we're into all kinds of music and this kind of stuff and have expanded since then.
Totally. We all have, like, I guess, like, unique, like, individual, like, creative origins. I mean, Lauren isn't giving herself a... Lauren used to be a really powerful visual artist, though. Then she went to science.
I still paint occasionally. Yeah. I have a painting in the Colt House, actually.
That
it's upstairs.
True. No, she does have a painting in the Colt House.
It's not as, you know, like, elaborate as this.
But a lot of it did start, like, collectively for us and, like, through music. I'm not as much of a visual artist. I mean, I'm trying more visual art stuff as of lately. Because of the pandemic, I've kind of been able to indulge in some new hobbies and stuff, which has been very refreshing. But for me, I've always been, like, mostly impassioned by music. And Christian Holscher, graphic designer, of course, has always been a very talented visual artist and painter from the start. And then as he got older, he got really into graphic design and ended up going to school for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of all had these, like, different, like, I guess, creative interests, and we all were passionate about music, and we had some overlap, but we all had pretty, like, unique individual tastes.
Yeah.
But we're also not really the type of people that, like, I guess we are the type of people that are, like, we listen to everything kind of thing. So we never really felt, like, particularly strongly about the kind of music that we would release on Cold Love, or, like, there's a lot of labels, like, especially in, like, harsh noise and extreme music that are, like, we only release this kind of music. And then sometimes it gets even more, like, you know, chopped and whittled down to something even more niche within that single genre of music. But for Cold Love, we never really had, I mean, I don't know, we all like a lot of different kinds of music. Mm-hmm. So we thought, why release one specific thing? And then also, like, a lot of it, again, comes back to just, like, we want to just push Tulsa forward. So it's like, we don't really have, like, any genre confines or anything. It's like, if it's a good local band and they seem to be good people and they're doing good things in Tulsa, then we want to help them and push them forward and be a platform for them.
Yeah. And I was going to say too, that, you know, this whole idea, and of course it's so interesting. I hear so many people who don't live here in Tulsa talk about the really vibrant music scene here. And that's what I was going to ask as well. Just anything that you all might add, just as far as your own experiences here and you know, what that looks like to you as far as the actual music scene here and what your experiences have been.
No, it's been, I mean, we do have a vibrant music scene. Obviously, this year was a little slower, but 2018, 2019, I'd say 3 or 4 nights out of the week, like, we were at a show.
Yeah.
Whether it was one that we helped book, did book solo, or we were just attending, like, there was always something to do.
Definitely. There was a period of definitely in the last couple of years, especially, like, me returning home from college, like, I think Colt Love was going to at least 3 to 5 shows a week usually.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also like, I'm really like, I mean, it's a hobby, but really it's just kind of a sad excuse for being a hoarder. But I'm like really into like archiving and like so we would document like all these concerts on cassette tapes. So I've got about 3 or 4 years worth of like music in Tulsa, in Lawrence, Kansas, and in Tokyo, where I went to college in Lawrence, Kansas, and I was involved in their music scene in Kansas cities. And then when I lived in Tokyo, I became real involved with their music scene. So I've got like about like upstairs in my room, I think I've got like 3 or 4 cardboard boxes filled with like maybe 400 bootleg cassettes of concerts I've been to over those 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And
and that's why all my purses are at least this big, so it can fit Natty's PCR in it to get to the door.
From that probably we weren't supposed to be recording, but I don't know, it's personal use.
Yeah, that's fine. We're not selling it.
Oh yeah.
It's like wiring, you know?
Yeah, literally. And it's like, I don't know, and it's kind of special to think about like having like this captured picture of like 3 or 4 years of like pretty niche music communities, especially in Tulsa where we grew up. And in a perfect world, like at some point in my life, I'll be able to like actually digitize all of them and then get them like archived, maybe somewhere on like a online public library or something where anybody could access them for free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that whole idea about being able to capture, you know, being able to capture these moments. I didn't know if any of this includes as far as the artist that you're working with, as far as any, is there any photography of any, I didn't know if there was any as far as photography of some of these live events or just any other types of events, mm-hmm. you know, that you guys are putting on.
There definitely is. I've recently gotten into photography as like a new hobby, but most of the photographers that came were just kind of like, we've hired some in the past for some bigger events, but most of the time it was just kind of like people like that kind of had like similar feelings of us, just like capturing the music scene or whatever. So they kind of just come up and document it themselves for their own like projects and hobbies, which is always really cool. It's funny because Tulsa's such like kind of a unique place right now, and like when you go to like other, like when we tour or like when we go to like other communities or when you live in other places, you kind of fully realize like how like unique and cool Tulsa is. I think it's pretty easy to grow up here sometimes and kind of just like, cast it aside because it's like, it's just like, it's Oklahoma, it's flyover county or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But then you go live somewhere else or you have people or you bring other people here from out of state and you hear like a lot of different perspectives on it and you're like, wow, there actually is like something pretty special happening in Tulsa right now. And not just music, I think with visual art too.
Oh yeah. It definitely feels like there, you know, that the city is really coming into its own. You know, it's interesting. There's been, you know, articles that I've seen about it. Some people are, you know, talking about it being the next Austin. I'm not so sure if that may be an overstatement, but it definitely does feel like there is some sort of it feels like there's something cooking to a certain mm-hmm. degree. I don't know if that resonates with you all or, yeah, it's just, it kind of feels like there's some things kind of simmering even, you know, as far as some of it on the back burner, some of it's cooking on the front burner, and yeah.
Sure. Lauren, what do you have to say about that?
No, there's a variety of stuff going on. I don't know about it being the next Austin. I'd like it to be a little more unique than the next Austin,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Maybe the housing costs still say about what they are right now.
Some public transportation would be really dope too. That's like beefed up public transportation.
Yeah.
Less road work.
Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely with you on that one, without a doubt. And then I was going to actually just kind of talk in current day as well, just a little bit. I didn't know if at this point, I didn't want to, and I definitely want to be careful about this because I don't know if this is public news as of yet, but as far as there anything that you guys are speaking about publicly, just a little to ask a little bit about the Colt House. I didn't know at this point, I didn't want to put you all on the spot, but it would be really cool just if there's anything that you have that you feel like you could share, would love to hear a little bit about that or just to your comfort level.
Oh, for sure. Lauren, you can take it. I've been talking to you too much. I had the full like Americano from like double shot. And then I had like a second cup of coffee on top of it.
So oh man.
With lime.
Yeah. Serious fuel.
But yeah, the Cult House was a, we started at the beginning of 2020, right? Or end, end of 2019.
End of 2019.
Okay, so pre-pandemic project. Yeah. But it's felt like such a long year, oh my gosh. But yeah, so we started at the end of 2019. This house is been in the Natty Watson family for years and years and years. His grandmother used to live here, and now he lives here. And we selected some artists who've always been very close to us to just fill the house with their own personal and beautiful murals. And
wow.
Almost every single wall in this house has been covered in just great art throughout, like downstairs, upstairs. Mm-hmm.
I think, I'm sorry, Lauren, did you have anything? It was kind of like, I think it was just kind of like, I don't know, there's like, I think for me personally with the idea, it kind of came from like a collaging of like, kind of like, the idea of like kind of like old school punk houses, how they, a lot of those would have like kind of like crazy art on the walls and stuff.
Yeah.
Also, there was kind of like the Miami Zoo Mansion, which was an old like art hip hop collective's like home that was a little better curated and wasn't so much like, you know, kind of chaotic punk art on the walls where, you know, somebody has a Sharpie and they just start drawing stuff. Oh, so it was kind of a collage of those two ideas where it was like we wanted to use this space to offer. Especially like artists we feel are kind of like, again, I'm going to use quotes because I don't want to sound particularly underground. Like I'm like up and coming artists of Tulsa, especially younger ones. We wanted to give them an opportunity to where they could come and we'd pay for all their supplies and we'd film them on VHSCs for documentation, archival purposes, as well as our promotional purposes. And they could basically do any sort of mural or art they wanted on the wall. So we have a huge amount of different, a huge variety of different artists from Tulsa that have put art up in the walls in here. And I don't think Lauren's exaggerating when like we're pretty much out of space. We've had people we know like mention wanting to do stuff in here. And at this point it's like, we have friends who want to do more art in here. And it's like, you really have to kind of like scrounge about for like in a good location.
It would be a good point.
But it's, where it's being debuted in Tulsa Noise, Nathan Young's Tulsa Noise Journal, which hopefully is going to be out either in the spring or early summer. And that's where it's going to be officially debuted. So we're waiting on that before we really kind of like, I guess not spill the beans about it, because we can talk about it. But I think like really show people the extent of the art in here. Yeah. So we like to have people come over and like grab their merch from here so we can like kind of like walk them through real quick. Since we can't like.
Oh, yeah. Kind of get the experience.
Yeah.
Sorry. But this is one of the pieces behind us.
Yeah, that is one.
I was going to say, I didn't know if there's anything you want to share about that. I mean, I love the colors on that. And just the,
So this is a Lucas Weisner piece. Lucas Weisner is a 22-year-old visual artist that does a lot of stuff with spray paint and a lot of like kind of like geometric style, like art and patterns with really like, usually like really intense kind of popping colors and pastels like that. He originally lived in Fort Smith, Arkansas before he moved here a couple years back. But we made his acquaintance through the band Crack Rock that he used to drum in, an old punk band. And we used to have like, me and him used to correspond all the time via mail and like mail each other just weirdo stuff. And we booked them a lot. And that was, so we've known them for about 4 or 5 years now. And then Lucas moved to Tulsa, Crack Rock broke up, and he's been doing a lot more visual art. But he's definitely somebody to keep your eyes on in Tulsa as far as visual artists go. He's very up and coming in our opinion. And honestly, I'd say that about anybody who has art in this house. They're people to keep your eyes on for sure.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I'm just thinking how wonderful that must be to just actually to be living in that space and have, you know, and to be surrounded by that. Yeah.
It's definitely surreal. It's a little, I think, I guess like, cause I'm the only one living here right now, but Christian used to live here and we've had people throughout here ever since I've lived here, but I don't know. I'm a really chaotic person aesthetically. So it's like, I really love it, but I could see some people maybe with more traditional tastes or milder tastes being really kind of perturbed by it, because there's some really chaotic rooms in here that quite frankly kind of just like beat down on you with the amount of art that's in them. Especially because the styles represented here are insane. Like there's so many different types of art in this house. So like, yeah, so you have stuff like this, and then you have like really, really abstract stuff like Michael Palazzo does, or kind of more like, how would you describe Bell's art? Kind of like, I guess like a new take on like, kind of like nude art. And it's, I think that's how I would describe it. But she's super talented too. And then like stuff like Morgan McClellan does, that's really like chaotic, just like meshes of styles. And then stuff like Christian Holscher, our graphic designer, does, that's also kind of more geometric, but with kind of a more like street style to it. But so there's I don't know, I don't know why I'm rambling about it, but there's a lot of different stuff represented here.
Yeah.
We're excited to get a debut it whenever we have the chance.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, just as far as, you know, I didn't know if there, in terms of any, as far as what your vision is, what, will there be opportunities for if people want to come in and actually tour and actually, you know, and see the art? I wasn't sure at this point as far as what, you know, what your future plans or what the vision is for that.
The originally our plan was definitely to have like a soft opening for it whenever we deemed it done, which hasn't really seemed to happen yet, because every time we think we're done, we find another space to fill somehow. But originally wanted to have like a soft opening, like kind of like, I guess, a private opening, but not really a private opening. It's not like we're not going to tell somebody, no, you can't come because you weren't invited. We're not that kind of people. But so we wanted to do kind of like a soft, like small opening, like little cocktail party thing, and then have maybe like a noise artist and a hip hop artist like perform in the basement as like entertainment. But obviously, the pandemic kind of completely wrecked that plan. So right now we're kind of just, all we have planned for it is basically to debut in the Tulsa Noise Journal when that comes out.
Yeah.
We could do an in-person thing like that. It's just going to be a little farther out than we hope.
Yeah. And there's some other
problems. It seems like there seems like 2020 was it felt like in some ways it was the longest year that I can remember. And then speaking of that, I was going to even ask you all just as far as what this time, you know, the past 9-10 months have been like, you know, for you as far as, you know, with Cult Love and with, you know, with how that's affected that. And then also just about your own, you know, anything you want to share about your own lives in terms of what this time has been like for you.
Well, obviously we haven't been able to do, you know, the in-person concerts like we normally do, you know. No community conferences or anything like that, but we've been able to keep up with our physical merchandise, cassette runs, t-shirt collaborations, and that kind of stuff. We did some live stream concerts, though, a couple DJ sets. We've been on OK No One Pirate Radio almost a lot of us have, which has been fun, and that's just another way to keep in touch with everybody. And then this project, of course. Which, you know, leaking photos, social media, and that kind of stuff. But really, the only thing that changed on a massive scale for us was the big in-person events that we were able to book.
Yeah, that was kind of like, it was kind of hard because at least, like, whenever the pandemic first happened, or we kind of realized, like, oh, dang, this is going to not just be, like, a one-month thing. This is going to be, like, a year. It was pretty, honestly, it was a little depressing because we had a ton of really big plans that were entirely based around in-person events.
Right.
And that just got completely pulled out from underneath us. So it was honestly a little disheartening at first, but after a month or two of kind of not really wallowing, but kind of just hiatusing, I guess. Well, I mean, I was probably,
I did some wallowing.
I was definitely wallowing, but we kind of like got back in the groove of things. And honestly, I kind of appreciate the pandemic now for forcing us to pivot a little bit. Because I do think we had to find ourselves stuck in a certain cycle of, like, occupying ourselves with certain things. Not that they were bad things to occupy yourself with, like very regular events. But we found that with the ceasing of that, we were able to kind of focus on other things that we were also equally passionate about. Like, we have also, like, a big communal hoodie collaboration happening right now where we burned some screens of our own of, like, the Cult Love logo and put it on a bunch of different hoodies.
I was hoping there was one over there.
Yeah, we were looking around for one show. And we passed them off to 14 different artists and kind of like DIY clothing people we know throughout the U.S. and Tulsa to do like collaborations on. And kind of as like to act as a platform for them and like debut their material and help promote them. We've been able to do stuff like that, like focus on kind of like wearable art, I guess, and like curation, like doing the murals in the house and of course the cassette tapes. Like we have, we got our Cult Love and Friends Volume 2 compilation coming out, which is a big Tulsa and actually I guess Oklahoma technically, compilation of just different artists and genres. So we're pretty excited about that too. And I guess, I mean, I don't know, have you revisited any old passions or found any new ones, Lauren, during the pandemic?
I paint a little more now. I mean, I painted that upstairs.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't.
Yeah.
I love it.
I painted, the upstairs thing. I hadn't done that in a long time. So
I found
some drawing. But other than that,
I I can't speak for Christian because he isn't here right now, but I at least, I like got back into like making music on my own again and stuff like that and playing in bands and kind of like in safe environments, obviously, but like I'm practicing. So I got to focus back again on kind of like my independent, like creative, I guess. I don't want to say career because that sounds over generous at this point, but like my creative passions and hobbies and things I like doing. Yeah. Forgotten about being occupied with Cold Love and prioritizing that most of the time, that I kind of forgot that I have like personal things I like doing. Like I like playing video games sometimes. That's pretty cool. I've gotten really into like screen printing and sewing and also some photography. So I've been trying out some new stuff that's been really fun and frankly refreshing to try new hobbies and like kind of try and learn as much as I can. I like to assimilate skills. I'm really big into that. Trying to become a jack of all trades, I guess.
Yeah,
I have a garden.
That's
a new hobby.
Oh, Lauren has a garden.
I made a garden.
Yeah, that counts. Yeah. Absolutely. And so I guess in some ways, is this maybe hopefully at the very least, has this been maybe about finding some maybe a different life balance to a certain degree? I don't know if that's overgeneralizing it, but just being able to kind of get in touch with, as you say, your own creativity and. But at the same time, not forgetting about, you know, what you guys are doing together, you know.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense or if that resonates.
Yeah, we meet her. So if I like, we just like, I keep looking at her to let her talk. And then we both say something simultaneously. But yeah, no, I would definitely say so. So it's been nice in some ways in that case of like revisiting things that I forgot that I was kind of passionate about, getting caught up in Cult Love all the time and kind of doing stuff for a broader community rather than just for my own creative purposes. So that's been nice, and especially trying out new things and making music again has been really cool. It's been really, really nice. Mm-hmm. Though it's kind of a bummer. I'm a big live music person, so the lack of events has been kind of like disheartening. Like I remember having like kind of like an identity crisis like at the beginning of the pandemic because so much of my life revolved around like live events, and we're very like feet in the streets type people. Mm-hmm. We're very big on like having like physical, tangible presence in the community because, I mean, social media is cool and useful, but it will never replace actual like human connection, I think, or physical like community. So whenever like the pandemic happened, I kind of was like, who the heck is Natty Watson without like live musics and events and shows? So I was like, not only is that what I do in my free time for fun, that's also like my passion, right? And also like kind of what I identify as like a person of live music, and also like what a lot of life goals revive like for me revolve around like live music. So I was kind of like, dang, I was like sitting on the couch back in like March and April. I was like, what the heck do I do now?
Oh, and then,
well, that's how we filled our evenings, you know. Yeah. We got off work and then I was like, well, what's next? You know, you look on Instagram and normally there was a tonight at Cameron Studios or tonight at Whittier Bar, and that it would like $5 entry. We were the ones there putting that $5 in the bucket, having a beer. So there was no longer that to do, and we couldn't do it, obviously. So it's like, what now? I guess I'm gonna start watching the Great British Baking Show. Like, I don't know. And I did. I watched all of them.
It all kind of panned out, though.
Yeah.
I feel like we learned a lot from this experience. And I feel like, honestly, probably in the long run, I think I'll look back on 2020, even though it really sucked for a million different reasons, and be that was probably an important – that was a pretty important year for the growth of Cold Love as a collective, mm-hmm. and just our own personal skills.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I was going to kind of change gears just a little bit, and this is really just from a place of curiosity. It's so interesting. When I was in junior high school, that's when I can't remember the exact year. I want to say maybe 77, 78. And I'm there again, this is just kind of an approximation, but I was in junior high school, cassette tapes came out, and everything before that, you know, it was vinyl. And all of a sudden you have this, and well, I take that back. Actually, I'm getting myself turned around because I can't remember if eight tracks maybe came out. I think they did come out before cassette. There was eight tracks and vinyl, but I don't think I've ever had an opportunity to ask anyone, you know, what is there something unique just about that particular medium that's why, because I noticed this, you know, in the DIY scene, mm-hmm. it seems to be cassette tapes, which I dig it and I love it, but I didn't know if there's any technical reasons or if this is more, I was really curious, you know, why the medium or the media is cassette tapes.
I mean, you can speak to the technical part. I'll speak to the art part.
I am a geek when it comes to cassette tape. I have 2 8-track players in this house too, and like an 8-track collection. I basically collect every form of physical medium you can think of, and like floppy disks. Wow. Like even weirder, more. I'm not even gonna say stupid, just silly, overly niche stuff. Why do you even have that? But to quote Christian, I think actually, he said it's a cheap textile object that represents a relationship with the listener. Mm-hmm. There's something so undefeatedly DIY and impersonally empowering about the cassette tape, and the fact that you are able to basically, you can do everything for a cassette tape release entirely on your own. And if it still has the same amount of like personality to it, I would argue that it has the same amount of personality to it as like a record, for example. Because you can really get extensive with art. And there's cassettes that come out that have like 8-panel J cards and like pad printing or laser engraving. So it's like you can really be extremely creative with a cassette tape. And it's durable. It's much more durable than like a record is. And it's a brutally personal format. And it's just completely, for me at least, I feel like cassette tapes are entirely about personal empowerment of the creative individual, mm-hmm. or a collective in this case.
And all of ours, like, we hand make them ourselves, you know. We get the Christian, normally Christian designs the work, and if art is provided to him, he does the layout and that kind of stuff. And then that we send to a print shop, normally use Boomerang Printing.
Yeah, shout out Boomerang Printing.
Thank you, Boomerang. But cassette dubbing, like Natty and I do that on this little stack of 6. We do one and then it does 6 at a time at my house.
All in real time too. We pride ourselves on the quality of audio of those cassettes, because there's a lot of people and labels that do like high speed dubbing, which is great if you're trying to just get like mass quantities out there, but there's obviously some like audio quality loss when you do it like that way. So it's like, yeah, so we got 3 Marantz PMD-510s for if there's any tech heads listening, which are dual independent well cassette decks. Mm-hmm. So they can dub time in real time and from one audio source. And we use Wave. We go from Wave files that the artist provides us straight onto cassette tape.
Very interesting.
It's tedious, though, too, which is one of the reasons why we keep our runs so small, because, you know, if we got, like, if somebody sends us, they want 50 cassettes of a hour and a half album, I mean, you divide that by 6, and I'm like, give me a second to do my math. That is like, that's basically 8 or 9 times dubbing a run of that, and then 9 times an hour and a half. So it ends up taking you like, you know, it'd take us 15 hours to dub that single run for somebody. And that doesn't also include the amount of work that Christian has to put into the art, and then us dropping off the prints, getting it printed, and then hand constructing them as well.
Right.
So it's a really tedious, rewarding, but extremely tedious process. There's a lot of love that goes into that. It's like, and I think it represents like a really personal relationship between not only the artist and the audience, but also us and the audience. I feel like there's a lot that went into that single cassette tape that you might be listening to, or you might just have on your desk because you don't have a cassette deck.
No, I love that though. Because I get the feeling that it is also a work of art. I don't know if that's.
It is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's great. Like we've done so many like crazy stuff with the art too. Like I wish Christian was here to go into more detail about it, because we've done some pretty like wonky stuff, like with where we've done like completely clear ones with like we do like translucent stickers that you can like see through instead of like J cards.
Was that Narco Ohms?
That was Narco Ohms. Yeah. Cassette tape release, and we all did like these like kind of like they're like transparency pieces of plastic that were multicolored with like prints of Narco Ohms art on them.
Mm-hmm. And the bird's beak, we did a double cassette where both was together and then a J card all the way around.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We've done a bunch of funky stuff with it. There's an incredible amount of room of creative flexibility in the medium of cassette tapes. Especially, you know, it's like, and you don't have to like, you know, go to a factory and wait 5 months for a record like you would otherwise or something like that.
Yeah.
Do we spray?
Now you guys got me where I'm finding myself all of a sudden. I want to get some cassettes. Now all of a sudden.
We got them all. Shoot us your address. We'll send you a package.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Is it easy? I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, want this to turn into like me asking a bunch of questions that other people may not know. Other people may not know about it. I mean, is it actually easy to find cassette players? I mean, I'm assuming that's something that can be done.
Yeah, totally. I think the biggest like roadblock, I think, for people getting into cassettes is mainly just like, especially for people our age, is the idea of like it not being on your, like, on a streaming service or something. So it's like, especially like a cassette deck, like that's a pretty chunky piece of material. And most people our age don't have, I mean, most people my parents' age even don't have like stereo systems anymore. They have like Bose sound bars or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I guess I feel like it'd be a little bit of they see it more as an inconvenience to some degree. But if you want a cassette deck, they're super easy to get a hold of. Especially, I mean, get on eBay, you can find them for like $15 and they'll still be working. And all those old ones still work really well if they weren't like, you know, like dropped in the garage or something.
Wow. Or like, so people are actually using ones like, let's say, from the 70s or the 80s.
Absolutely.
Some of those are still interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking at 7 cassette decks right now in this house alone, just sitting right here.
And then two of the 3 that I have at my house, I actually bought off the back of like an army surplus truck, which was bizarre. So they're from like the 90s. They were in perfect condition.
That was a serious level up. Because before Lauren got this like professional master decks, the Marances, we were using just like, we just had this crazy sketchy stack of like old thrift store cassette decks. And you'd have to be like looking all the buttons at once because there wasn't like synthesizers or anything to it. And each one, because they're all from different decades, they all had like certain audio quality to them, because like the cassette compression on all of them would be different. So like each cassette dubbed on all this kind of had a unique sound to them. Wow. That was it's gotten a lot more simplified since then, though it is still a tedious process.
Yeah. Do you guys keep a collection of all the cassettes that you have, you know, that you've produced? I didn't know if there's like a kind of a master collection, you know, as far as maybe having everything that you guys have put out or.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm missing a few from my, because each of us keeps usually a copy of whatever run we do, whether we're sponsoring it or whether the artist is paying for it. Because there's 2 ways we do it, which is where we sponsor the run for the artist, where it's we cover all the costs of production, and then we give the artist an allotted amount of copies, which is pretty flexible depending on what they want. And then we keep our copies. It's basically like you do what you want with your copies, whether it's give them away or sell them, and you keep your money over there, and we sell these copies, and we keep our money over here from these.
Oh, yeah.
But the artist doesn't want to pay for them themselves. And then other times we have bands, especially touring acts, or when there was touring music, would pay for us to just do the production of their cassettes, and then they take the whole run. But usually we'd keep a copy apiece. So I think we probably ought to have, between the 3 of us, we definitely have all the releases we've ever done. I've lost a few of mine just from, like, I've had collectors contact me for, like, certain copies that were long out of due. And I honestly kind of just keep mine boxed up in, like, this, like, little, like, holy
time capsule.
Yeah, time capsule. I was like, it's better off with those people than with me, honestly. I was like, I'd rather them have it because they'd appreciate it more than me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm also, as we're coming to a conclusion, I was going to ask you, am I correct in understanding, do most of the people who buy these cassettes, I'm assuming that there is some kind of a personal connection, you know, with the band or in terms of some sort of, maybe, I don't know if maybe they all know, you know, these band members personally, but I didn't know if there is some kind of a sense, I'm getting the sense that there's some sort of personal connection, not only to, you know, with the bands, but also with you guys. I didn't know if that rings true or not, or, you know, just getting the sense that you all are producing these and
I would definitely say that like Colt Love as a label has like, I guess like regulars or like people that do like actively follow us as a collective and a label, that maybe don't necessarily know the band, but know the kind of stuff we put out, mm-hmm. even though it's really broad and wide. So we have people there. So it's like, we have audiences that are familiar with the artist that buy their music from us, but we also have our own audience of people that are familiar with the label side of us as a collective that also purchase music from us.
Yeah. And then occasionally we'll just get an order from like Germany. And we'll look at it. Wow. And we're like, I have no idea where this came from, but we're gonna put in a bunch of extra stuff in there and hope that they get more.
Like first time buyers, usually we ensure that we give them a pretty special packaging deal.
Yeah.
But we ship internationally all the time. It's pretty. And so you'll be surprised. We'll put out some weird, really niche stuff that's almost like, I would almost say like, almost like inside joke level niche, like just between some for a fun project. And then all of a sudden somebody in Florida wants the last copy of it. And you're like, how the heck did you find out?
Where did they see this? Yeah. But we're going to mail it to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I was going to say that's very cool. I mean, that there are people, because I guess that almost gets into, I don't know if the right word is curation, or that you're, you know, if you have people that are just, you know, they may not even be familiar with the band, but they really, you know, really value what you guys are putting out there. You know, that they're excited about actually getting this because they know you guys, or they bought these from you before. I mean, I think that's really neat to be able to have that opportunity to kind of curate this to a certain degree, or, you know, turning people on to something that they haven't heard before.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. It's absolutely, it's awesome. I don't know. It's a lot of fun to just like, just be able to promote cool projects. It's an honor to be a part of that, be a platform for them. But there's a huge curatorial essence to like a lot of what Cole Love does beyond just cassette tapes and murals. I mean, I don't know. It comes with the territory when it's so hugely communal, involved, and collaborative.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I thank you both so much for taking this time. This has just been incredibly meaningful. I feel like this is, you know, just reading about you guys enough was to the point where when the team at Living Arts asked me if I would talk to you guys, I'm like, absolutely. I mean, it just wasn't even a second thought about it. But I mean, to hear all this from you both is just, it's really incredibly meaningful. I mean, it really is. So I can't thank you all enough for taking the time with me today. This has been great.
Yeah.
Shouts out. Can we do some shouts out real quick?
Oh man, absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Shouts out to Jeff for interviewing us. Parts 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 coming. They're all going to be twice the length. And then
Jeff.
Well, that would be, you would be the martyr in that case, Jeff.
You would ramble like this. Absolutely, man.
George Christ, aka George Christian Holscher. We miss you.
Yeah.
Shouts out to all of you in Tulsa. Shouts out to all our friends, collaborators, associates, fans, rivals, moms, dads, dogs, pets. Shouts out Shadow. Shouts out the homies in Oklahoma. Beyond that, y'all know who you are. We all love you. Keep riding with us. There's so much more to come that we haven't even announced yet.
Love it. Didn't know, Lauren, if there's any others. I just want to make sure I just want to give you guys.
I mean, he shouted out Shadow, and that's my dog, so I think we're good.
That was a really important one besides Christian.
Well, thank you guys again so much. It's been fantastic getting to meet you and to hear your story, and I'm just really moved by it. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much,
Thank you so much.
We've had a lot of fun. It was great meeting you. We'll meet you again sometime.